Call to order. Today's Friday, March 16th. We made it through the Ides of March. I barely made it. The time is 8 o'clock. It wasn't a good day. And present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. Other people are on their way. But we do have a quorum, and we do need to remind ourselves to turn our cell phones off. And we're going to start this morning with the confirmation hearing of the student regent of the University of Alaska Board of Regents, Murray Freitag, and the superintendent presentation by Jeff Thielbar, Skagway School District, followed by SB 137, Suicide Awareness and Prevention Training. We will defer discussion of the educational standards to Monday to give Commissioner Hanley and the committee time to review materials I've prepared. So, Ms. Freitag, please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and tell us why you want to serve as a student regent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mari Freitag, for the record. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about myself, if that's all right. I was born and raised in Ketchikan. I grew up there until I was 18 and graduated from Ketchikan High School in 2008. And then I moved up to Fairbanks 4 years ago to go to school. I'm studying political science with a minor in justice. I will graduate next spring, and I plan on going to law school after that and then come back to practice in Alaska. I first became involved with student governance through the Associated Students of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, which is our student government up there. I spent 2 years as a senator starting my freshman year, and then I was elected vice president in 2010, and then I'm currently the president of the student government. And that's a position I'll be seeking re-election for as well. I was exposed to university statewide student governance through the Coalition of Student Leaders, which is how I started going to Board of Regents meetings and learned about the opportunity to become the student regent. It seemed like a really great opportunity for me to expand my ability to represent the students at a higher capacity, and I really enjoyed being able to take my knowledge back from what I learned at the board to the coalition as well as the associate students of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. It's a really rewarding experience, and I've enjoyed it so far. I've learned a lot. The university is a very complex system, but it's incredibly interesting. So it's made me love Alaska even more, too. So, any questions?
Yes, I have a question. As a student representative on the Board of Regents, on this end of the world, we hear rumblings that come out of the university, mm-hmm. and there's some good things happening. I know there's some very positive changes, mm-hmm. but there is a need for somebody in your position to really speak directly to maybe some issues that aren't being addressed. Mm-hmm. I've seen student representatives on boards like this before that just sat very quietly. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, are you willing to be articulate enough to and bold enough to really speak to and address some of the issues that maybe others aren't even speaking to?
I guess it depends on the issue. I've actually generally been pretty quiet so far on the board. I know that when tuition is starting to be discussed, I'll be very vocal. I make sure I talk at least at every meeting about things. So I never sit through an entire meeting silent. I do that on purpose because it's very important. Because sometimes the 8-year term regents lose sight of students occasionally just because they're really removed. And I interact with the students all the time, and so I'm able to tell them, you know, this is going to be the reaction of the students. I want you guys to know that. And so I am vocal about it, and I try to be as much as I can.
Also, you mentioned coming back and practicing in Alaska. You're talking about law, or might you even... political science. I was wondering if you had aspirations for this building.
I haven't decided yet. I don't have to figure that out until I graduate law school. So, okay. Yeah, whatever presents itself, I'll do. So, but I definitely plan on coming back to Alaska. I've learned a lot about the state over the past couple years that have made me want to come back. I wouldn't rather live anywhere else. So,
okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we concentrated in the last couple years on looking at things that would improve the completion rate, graduation rates, and college and credential programs. And so Education Committee, the Task Force on Higher Education, and in fact the committee incorporated a requirement that at all the campuses that would take the Alaska Performance Scholarship, they would incorporate a advisor advocate program with each student that's going through a degree program. Has the board, while you've been there, is that an issue that completion rates and advisor advocate program, has that been a topic that is at the forefront of the Ford region?
Yes, through the chair, it has been. It's actually been really great for me to come on the board because that it was a topic of a very strong topic of discussion starting when I came on the board. And I think it actually has a lot to do with President Gamble. He's been focusing a lot on how to make the experience better for students and how to get students through faster with not spending as much money, that kind of thing. And so it definitely has been a focus, and I've been really pleased to see that. And I've mm-hmm. said in my regent comments, I'm really happy that we're talking about this. And it's definitely a big topic. It's kind of driving a lot of the things that we're doing, like parts of the operating budget that the governor had taken out that was put back by the House. Those things have a lot to do with those goals. So we were happy to see them put back in.
Follow up. And so thank you very much. And like I do want to recommend to you, if you haven't looked at the Task Force on Higher Education that we had 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and President Gamble was a member of that task force as well. If you take a look through those recommendations, it might be helpful because not waiting for somebody to implement something, mm-hmm. you'll see where the legislature was coming from, and that might be helpful as showing accomplishments in relationship to the higher education task force. So just wanted to put that suggestion out there because those recommendations are something that I think would be very valuable to make sure that you were aware of all those as a unit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And also, I do want to mention that Representative Wilson is ill and excused, and Representative Sissonner just joined us. Representative Sissonner, we're talking with Mari Freitag, confirmation for a student for Board of Regents. Representative Feige, you had a thought or a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your experience, what is the most frustrating aspect for students as they try to get to the point of graduating from UAS?
In my experience, I would want to use the example of advising, honestly. I have an excellent advisor now, but I know that it's a problem for a lot of students, which is why I was happy that the president's been focusing on it more. But it is difficult because sometimes students classes aren't offered every semester, and sometimes you can just get behind because you don't take a class on time, and then all of a sudden you have to spend an extra year because you got put back, and that's a prerequisite for another class you would have taken the next semester. And so that's one thing that's really difficult for students. It just kind of puts them off in their planning. And so good advisors can help them plan through that. And if advisors understand the way the department works and the degree program works, then they're better able to help the student plan. And there are really good advisors for that. Another thing would just be the cost of school, which there's lots of opportunity for students to have aid through college, but it's definitely a concern. I've seen people drop out because they can't afford it. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Follow up? Getting back to the scheduling, mm-hmm. is that a failure of the student to properly plan, or is it a failure of the faculty to properly mm-hmm. schedule?
Well, through the chair, I would say it's some fault does have to fall on the student because there are students that they're not as proactive about planning their college career. But I think that the departments know when classes are offered that it might be inconvenient, and I think they try to address it the best they can. It has a lot to do with faculty, like lack of faculty, that they can't teach the same classes every semester. So I think it's probably a combination of all of it, but a lot of it has to do with some students just aren't proactive. other students are, and they do really well, especially if they have a good advisor. But when not so proactive students have good advisors, then that problem is essentially solved.
That's how some students rise to the top and others go to the bottom.
So, that's all. Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And just one example of what an advisor, what changes they could make is when I was at University of Alaska Fairbanks, I was going through and then going to do a Master's of Arts in Teaching for the teaching credential. And if it hadn't been for the advice of faculty, I wouldn't have known that if you had excess credits for your undergraduate degree, you can actually waive those credits beyond your bachelor's and they apply to your master's. And so most students don't even know. They go through, they get, and then they have to start all over for their master's instead of waiving credits, you know, upper division credits that aren't required for that degree beyond. So it's not only that students aren't proactive, it's that there are things that are almost hidden that you that students won't know. So I appreciate that. The other thing on courses that I was interested in, has the university been proactive in providing information to students that they can take those courses online from other universities or from online access so that they aren't held up by those prerequisite courses, or is that one of those things that's kind of hidden as well?
Through the chair, I believe that advisors generally will let students know about those types of opportunities if they don't already. I've known that I could always take classes through other universities within the system, even before I was involved in statewide governance. But it might be a little hidden. I'm not really sure on that, actually, because I've never had to take a class online from a different institution within the system. But I think that's kind of one of the things that just comes down to your advisor and how they're going to, if you get into a bind like that, if they help you solve the problem in that way, I think that's what it would come down to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Representative Seaton, Assistant, excuse me.
thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I'm learning things right now. It's amazing how you don't need college. I just learned that I could have transferred in some undergraduate credits, and I really added a lot more work on. Thank you for the information, which is also, I did have advisors, and so one advisor doesn't know everything. And transferring credits from one UAA system to the other doesn't always work. If they're a different number, it doesn't work. And that's something we need to continue working on, because it's, you know, it sounds good. It's certain, there's certain programs it works on. Mm-hmm. To that kind of place, the whole idea that we need to keep working, to me, the thing that's been hitting me more and more, because in this committee, we've had this ongoing, very interesting conversation about where schools are in Alaska and what is Alaska? Where is it? It's the only Arctic state in the United States. And a huge vast population in terms of the land they live on are in another world. They're not in this urban world. And the transition from the world that they live in is difficult at the education, at the primary, secondary levels. But then to college is the other huge, big jump. And can you tell me what your feeling is about the fact that we do live in a state that the urban area doesn't really understand the rural area, hasn't been there lots of times, doesn't understand how very different our worlds are? Can you just speak to that and how you think that could work into what you do?
Through the chair. I would start by saying that there are a lot of programs that help rural students. I'm only actually really familiar with how UAF deals with it, honestly. But there's the College of Rural, or the it's a rural advising program, and so they take care of the rural students very well. They have some of the best advising in the school, actually. And then there are also lots of programs through Residence Life where students coming from rural communities can live. They have a separate, they have separate housing, so they can kind of transition a little easier into the urban area. And so I think that it is a very difficult sort of transition. I've seen it happen. I've been an orientation leader with the students for new freshmen coming in, and so I've seen rural students that are, they don't really know how to handle the transition. But that's something that, I mean, I'm going to be traveling to Bethel for the commencement in the spring because I want to see how they work there and how their students end up learning and how that can be transferred. Because a lot of people from the Kuskokwim campus end up coming to UAF and Fairbanks. And so I think I just want to more expose myself to it more, and I'll always represent it as much as I can. Actually, my other half is from Bethel as well, and so he gives me a lot of really great perspective on how rural UPIC students can have some trouble transitioning into urban areas. But I think I'm just going to be having to expose myself to it more. So.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for a follow-up. The other side of that is that there is a knowledge base that exists in rural Alaska that we do not take advantage of. And that's one of, I think, the real tragedies that's happened in Alaska so far, mm-hmm. is that we're not really understanding just how very important the first Alaskans were, mm-hmm. and the lessons they learned, and we need to learn, because we're having trouble keeping people in the communities. Well, they weren't communities. It was a different way of living, mm-hmm. but they lasted for thousands of years. So can you tell me if there's ways that you can see that we, actually, the governor has put it very well, choose respect, mm-hmm. and really begin to see the assets in all the different parts that we have in Alaska?
Through the chair. Mm-hmm. I would say that the program at UAF to learn about the UPIC culture and language is really strong, and I like that an alternative to part of the core, the humanitarian courses that every student is required to take when they're seeking a bachelor's degree. You can also opt to take a language, and you can choose to take a UPIC language or Athabascan. And so I really see that, I would say that is, if we can encourage those programs as much as possible, then we can show that we do care about the rural communities and their cultures, because they are very important, I would agree with you. And so there's a lot of really actually cool, there's cool clubs that participate in your UPF dancing at UAF, and we can just encourage that sort of thing and encourage more people to learn about the UPIC culture and the Athabascan culture and the different cultures that they offer education about at UAF. That would be excellent, and I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Ms. Freitag. And Representative Seaton, will you move the Confirmation Committee report?
I'd be pleased to, Mr. Chairman. And so I would move that the Confirmation Report for the Student Regent, Mari Freitag, from committee be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. And note that this does not reflect the intent of any of the members to vote for or against the appointee.
And lacking objection to the motion is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and I believe online we have Superintendent Jeff Thielbar from Skagway School District. Tell us about his district's challenge success. Tried to have him here once before and didn't make it, so, there we are.
Good morning, sir.
And identify yourself for the record, if you would, please.
My name is Dr. Jeffrey Thielbar. I'm the superintendent of schools for Skagway, Alaska.
And go ahead with your presentation, if you would.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here and allow me to present my favorite thing, which is Skagway School District.
Time out. I'm sorry. I thought we were ready.
Mr. Chairman,
we have a brief. Brief at ease.
Thank you for the opportunity to present. I'll take a few minutes just to make a brief PowerPoint presentation on the Skagway and the perceptions we have for Skagway. First of all, Skagway has two seasons as opposed to the normal four that we have in Alaska, you know, spring, summer, fall, and winter. We have what we call tourist season, then we have winter. As you can see by the two different slides, the tourist system, Skagway, is brimming with people as cruise ships are in. And then in the winter, it's Skagway. And it's a completely different place. Most people think of the first slide being Skagway because that's a summertime issue and that's when we get all of our visitors, or most of them, whereas that is the Skagway you would see if you were to come to Skagway right now with nobody on the streets. There might be a car there. We do have one on there now or two that's in the picture, but it's a completely different situation. However, after the tourist industry locks their doors and the last cruise ship has left the dock, a totally different Skagway emerges. Skagway becomes a quiet little town with one of the highest unemployment rates in Alaska. The diamond shops close down and all the money from the tourist industry heads south, and we return to the same Skagway that I'm aware of for 8 or 9 more months. The district population for Skagway schools has been dropping dramatically. As you can see by this slide, in 2002, we had 120.2 was the ADM, which is the district count from October, the beginning of October for 20 days, for 4 weeks count. Mm-hmm. This year, we're down to 58.7. I'm not sure how we get 0.7 of a student, but it's just because of averages, and that's the way it works out. When we start school in August, we boast 20% more students than that, because we have many seasonal workers from our tourist season that stay through September, then they leave and come back again in April.
Excuse me for 1 second. We have been joined by Representative Miller. We have a few empty seats here, sir, if you want to join us.
I'll probably have to run, but thank you.
Okay, very good. Go ahead if you would.
Thank you, sir. Next year, the district will have a total of 9.3 teachers in order to educate those students. We are reducing one full-time high school teacher from this year to next year, simply to budget constraints. Our science teaching position is now gone, and we will be asking our math teacher to absorb all of the science classes as well in the high school, where we'll actually have two in our four core subjects, two teachers, one that teaches English and mathematics, one that teaches, or excuse me, English and history, one that teaches mathematics and sciences. Every elementary teacher within the building also teaches multiple grades. We don't have a third grade classroom. We have a third and fourth grade classroom, or a second and third grade classroom, those kind of things. Mostly common for small school districts. Okay. Go ahead to the next slide. In order to provide a free and appropriate public education to Skagway students, we've become very adept at teaching classes in ways that were once unheard of when you and I were in school. We use technology to a vast degree. Here you see middle school students that are using computers to access information. Second and third grade students in the upper right picture there, which are using interactive whiteboards to present information to each other. And then in the bottom we see kindergarten. Those are kindergartners with their headphones on, working on computers, using interactive computers and a smart board or interactive whiteboard as well. And they are taking discussions and learning reading, actually. Our high school students are taking classes in everything from social studies to math to health online, and have other classes that they're also taking. Foreign languages we offer online. We need to, of course, provide a vast variety and a fairly scripted set of classes in order to accommodate the Alaska Performance Scholarship. We're meeting that challenge through technology. However, this all costs a lot of money. As you know, it takes quite a bit of money to put these kind of technologies into the classroom. It also still requires a dedicated professional in there to assist the students, help them get on to the classes that they need, advise them, as we heard from our last speakers, so that they can take the appropriate classes, and then also to monitor them while they're there so that they work on the classes and not other things that students like to work on. By combining technology and excellent teaching, we're able to offer classes like calculus, AP literature and language, physics, French and Spanish.
Excuse me, can I interrupt? Are you using the Bush physics? Where's your physics class coming from, sir?
My physics class is actually being taught by a teacher in the classroom. Our AP classes are also.
Okay.
But by using technology for the other classes, because when they're teaching that class, other students are taking the online courses that we provide.
Thank you.
Okay. It's obvious that Skagway School is successful. Even though our enrollment is declining, our attendance and graduation rate is still well over 90%. And those are average, 10-year averages. This year, we would have much better numbers even that's being shown. It's very disheartening, however, to hear comments from our governor like we're wasting our money in education. It's very also disheartening to hear other legislators talk about until graduation rates increase, no more money for high schools or for public education. Our graduation 10-year average 92.2. Our graduation rate this year 100%. Attendance 10-year average 91.6% attendance. This year it'll be over 95%. As you can see, some school districts are working with the present plan that we have. Another piece of evidence that not all schools are broken is our percentage of students that are proficient or above proficient on the state assessments. We routinely score over 90% of our students as proficient or above proficient. Again, 10-year average is 97.3% of our students are proficient or above proficient. That's including our special ed population. That's including our migrant populations, everything. There's no number game here. That's how many of the students in Skagway are proficient on our state tests. This year, let's talk a little funding here. With the basic need, that's the state determined using our Kerman formula, says that $966,000 is approximately what Skagway School District needs to provide a free and appropriate education for students. I'll not go into how low that figure might be or how high it might be because it's the formula we work with. But I would like to talk a little bit about the state support within that formula, even though that might be what I consider a low formula for many students that we produce. Considering the basic need allocated by the current funding formula, the state of Alaska provides 41% of Skagway's education. That's the lowest percentage of any school district in the state. So you can take the basic need of every school district in the state, figure out what the state's percentage that they're allocating to that school district, you'll find Skagway's is the lowest. Some districts are getting more than 100% simply due to the way the formula is configured and negotiations that occurred when the ICER and all of that was begun. This lack of state support places a real undue hardship on the citizens of Skagway because they're forced to pay the difference if they want to maintain an adequate education. Increases in funding for transportation won't filter down to Skagway because we don't have a transportation. Our students are brought in by their parents for when they live outside of town. So adding monies through the transportation to help schools won't help Skagway School District. We get zero. We need support from the state by adding to the funding formula or adjusting the ICER so that Skagway receives a higher percentage from the state. Therefore, the city can work on other things. Remember back to the picture of what Skagway looks like 8 or 9 months of the year with the empty streets and with no one being on there. All the diamond shops are closed. All the revenue from the tourist industries right in Holland, America, and it went south to St. Croix and St. Thomas where they work during the winter months. Our individual assembly is trying to utilize their revenues and their available monies to increase our economic development. We're working on docks and things like that so we can transport mine tailings out from Canadian mines that are trying to start. All those types of issues that require all the funding from our assembly. However, we've been fortunate at Skagway School District that they realize education is very important. They provide the other 59% plus more. Just like in most school districts, they provide even above the cap, which is for student activities, transportation, those types of areas, non-operating budget areas. I guess I would like to leave you with the impression that not all schools and all school districts are broken. That there are some that are producing 95% and higher proficient and above students on our state's tests. They're doing very well. They're going on to college and careers. Not all of our students go to college, but every one of our students go to a career, the military, or to a college of training of some sort. We need your help. And that's why I'm here, to present that issue to you. I know we have a lot of issues that are in the state of Alaska. I thank you for your time, for your efforts, for being here on a morning when I know you have jobs to be everywhere else, as well as anyone else. And I'll close my presentation by saying thank you.
Well, thank you. I do have a question. That educating the whole child intellectually, emotionally, and what, is that your mission statement?
That is our mission statement. Yes, sir. Statement.
It's interesting that throughout the state, all the mission statements are so different, and yet they're so much the same. It's, I didn't notice that. Comment from committee. Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I was able to visit your school at one point when, in fact, everything, it was kind of early tourist season, right? So not as many, not as full. The streets were not as full of people, but at least got a picture of kind of the transition so that I could kind of imagine. And, well, and I have come through also when there wasn't many people there. But there's some things happening in your community that that I've noted recently, and that is the what appears to be a growing interest in your community as a destination for Canadians because of mining or something like that, shipping things from Whitehorse. They're really talking about. I was reading in Whitehorse this summer and reading about how great Skagway was. I mean, you know, so that's an important link, but it's a link that's got some challenges to it. And yet I'm looking at your numbers, and you've got half the population that you had a decade ago, right? Is that right?
Through the chair.
Number of kids.
That would be correct.
Yeah. And that's, and you've done an incredible job. Because Skagway has really serious problems with weather and the change in those two different worlds, the summer and the winter. And the online, it has to be important in terms of the ability to be teaching kids from their homes, wherever those their homes are, on occasion, because how else are you going to do it? Can you tell me just how that works?
Through the chair, Representative Cessna, we do have an extensive online coursework. The travel problems are generally from trying to get out of Skagway or into it, so luckily we can bring our students to school 99% of the time. But our biggest challenge in the technology area is simply what they call bandwidth. The size of a pipe, if you think of water, that we can bring into with the amount of data interaction we can have with the outside world. In Alaska, that's just a challenging thing because we don't have fiber optic coming in. All of our stuff is brought in through microwave towers. We work with Alaska Power and Telephone, who's our provider at this time, providing that. And we bring in a 5 megabit line, which works well on a limited basis. So what we do is we have our technology and maintenance person, because nobody in Skagway does one job. He monitors that line so we can, and we don't download programs or updates or apps or any of those kind of things during school because it takes up that whole bandwidth that we have available to us. We have to manage that for when we're streaming and doing things. We bring a lot of things in and download them at night. Discovery Education is a program which we're very proud that we have. That's the Discovery Channel on TV that you can see. We provide that to many of our classes every day by downloading at night what they want to see the next day. Then it's on our internal servers and able to broadcast. Our biggest challenge is we don't have a good pipeline of internet access coming into the city on a daily basis.
That's and the numbers of, do you have an idea of just how many students there are that communicate that way, get their training that way, sort of weekly, monthly, yearly, what kind of percentage of the school population have access that way?
Through the chair, yes, ma'am. I'd say 100% of our students every day in some way are online. From our kindergarten class interacting through their computers and their system setups to students that every day receive their entire class online in the high school.
Thank you. And for the record, we've been joined by Representative Pruitt, and now Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to say it, you know, your district is doing an impressive job, and I wouldn't want anybody that's listening to this think that you're the only one that is. I mean, we had presentations from Ketchikan yesterday. We've had St. Mary's in the past. We've had Tlaloc. We've had Nome. We've had some really impressive numbers that are similar to you, where school districts are performing exceptionally well and accomplishing what we want them to accomplish. Not that there's ever the point where you want to quit and say we're there, but I just wanted to recognize that your statement is absolutely what we're seeing in many districts around. I'm concerned about your last slide on the number, the 41% being the amount of state funding. And I'm wondering if that is because of the cruise ship docks and the 4 mil, or I'm not sure what your local effort is now, but the mill rate, and do they assess the cruise ship docks as being high value infrastructure, and therefore that runs up the local effort that's required? Or do you know what the condition is that is causing that high percentage of required local effort?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, yes, it's from the ICER, which was over 10 years ago, the ICER study that came through and assigned each individual community as to what percentage that they should be able to bring in from property values. In Skagway, just because it is a port community, northernmost part of the Lynn Canal that's open 24 hours a day, every day, that ICER was able to have that huge index, which has caused this for us. The problem with that is, I'm sure they came in the summertime, and they didn't see that in the wintertime we have 10% unemployment, that our houses are empty. Those are seasonal rentals and those kind of things, so we don't have that base. Now, we can charge. The city, the municipality of Skagway, also has head tax and those kind of things, which they charge on the cruise lines for using the port. However, that money is very regulated, can't be used for schools because that doesn't impact the cruise ship industry. So it's those mix of things, in my estimation, and I'm certainly not an economist, that has caused the thing. To my way of thinking, to solve the problem, the ICER or that needs to be redone. 10 years ago, we were a different school district. 10 years ago, Alaska was a different state. And we're still trying to use that old formula within the current funding system.
Thank you. And I believe that has become a topic, and it's one that we're discussing in this building right now. So it's very timely testimony. We've been joined by Representative Kawasaki, and Representative Feige has a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chairman.
I'll take that.
Don't let it go to your head. You didn't have anything up there on facilities. What kind of facilities do you have, and how have those facilities changed in the last 10 years?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, the facilities are amazing. We have excellent facilities. We have a school that was built in 1983. It's a single building school, houses K-12. Our facilities are well maintained. The assembly, the municipality has provided for that. Our building is actually larger than one would think a school of our size needs, because it was built for a school of 180 students where we have 58 in the wintertime. So we have lots of room. We have an excellent facility. If there is a high point, other than our students and our parents being awesome, it would be that we have a great building.
Thank you. Well, we do need to move on, but very good testimony, and I promise you we'll remember that when in all the conversations that happen in this building. Thank you, sir.
Chairman Dick, thank you very much.
Sure. Okay, well, next on the agenda, we'll take up SB 137, Suicide Awareness Prevention Training. Tom Obermeyer, if you wouldn't mind to come forward, sir, and I understand Representative Fahey does need to leave. We have an amendment to consider, but let's hear the sponsor speak to the bill first, and then we'll talk to the that amendment. Tom, just for the record, and give your give us an explanation, if you would, sir.
I'm sorry, and I didn't hear the entire present. You want an explanation of the amendment, or what?
No, if you just give your presentation, and we'll do the amendment after okay, you do give us the presentation.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Dick and members of the Education Committee. I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you is Senate Bill 137. It's an act requiring suicide awareness and prevention training for certain school personnel. This bill, titled the Jason Flack Act, requires mandatory youth suicide awareness and prevention training approved by the Commissioner, Department of Education Early Development, to each teacher, administrator, counselor, and specialist who is employed by the school district, regional educational attendance area, or department each year for services to students in grades 7 through 12. Training is important because suicide is the third leading cause of death for ages 10 through 24 and the number one cause of death for Alaskans under the age of 50. Awareness and education are key to prevention. Tying suicide prevention efforts into teacher training has proved very helpful in other states in reducing teen suicides. Most young people contemplating suicide show clear warning signs prior to the attempt. It is imperative that educators know how to recognize signs of at-risk youth and are prepared to intervene when they identify a problem. Recognizing that Alaska has by far the highest rate of suicide per capita in the country, particularly among teens, young men, and Alaska Natives, the Alaska Mental Health Board and Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, in partnership with the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, the Alaska Association of Student Governments, the University of Alaska, and the Jason Foundation, have established goals, training programs, and resources for teachers, coaches, and staff in suicide prevention. The Alaska Bureau of Vital Statistics 2000 through 2009 reported the following facts. 21.8 suicides per 100,000 Alaskans versus 11.5 suicides nationwide per 100,000. So we're roughly twice the average. 56.1 suicides young men ages 15 through 24 and 141.6 Native young men and 50.3 young women of the same age group. I only mention these statistics because these statistics are amazingly high and they have not declined over the many years, and that's the reason for this program. 1,369 suicides in 176 Alaska communities between 2000 and 2009, or about 11 per month, 2.6 per week. And our office has received a couple of notices from some rural areas of young suicides since we brought this forward this session already. 78% of suicides were committed by men and 22% by women, who made twice and sometimes three times as many more failed attempts. 90% of suicide victims experienced depression or had diagnosable and treatable mental health or substance abuse disorders. The 2011 Youth Risk Behavior Survey revealed that in the last 12 months, 12.8% Alaska high school students reported they had seriously considered suicide, 8.7% actually attempted suicide one or more times, and 2.7% attempted suicide resulting in injury, poisoning, or overdose by a doctor or a nurse.
And I think you've seen a handout that indicates that this is a nationwide problem as well. There are like 660,000 people who have gone through emergency rooms in the last year. It costs an enormous amount of money to try to bring these people back, and many times it fails. Just as it takes a village to raise a child, it takes parents, teachers, mentors, and communities to support the efforts to reduce suicides by developing environments of respect and connectedness among youth and adult role models. This will create in youth the needed hope, promise, and optimism to build healthy and appropriate relationships and behaviors. By requiring and making resources available for suicide prevention training for educators and school staff through this bill, the state of Alaska can ensure that youth at risk of suicide are more likely to be identified and receive help. Alaska has many state agencies, nonprofits, private citizens, health care providers, and policymakers working on this problem with programs and materials. This bill is but one part of a suicide prevention program which has proved successful in other states. The Jason Foundation, which was named after the tragic loss of the founder's son, and I might mention Clark Flatt is online about this right now, of the Jason Foundation, has made available to Alaska and a limited number of other states its library of suicide awareness and prevention training materials free of charge. Not only will this bill and community efforts reduce suicides, particularly among vulnerable youth, but it will also reduce the number of self-inflicted injuries occasioned in over 1,200 hospitalizations per year due to attempts at a cost of $9,000 per case, excluding physicians, specialist fees, and researched and reported by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority in 2001-2. The same research found 75% of the cost of Alaska suicide hospitalizations were paid through public funding sources, and 15% were written off as losses by hospitals. Suicides and attempted suicides have taken an incalculable toll on individuals and families in Alaska. The burden of this tragedy is shared by society as a whole. With all of our efforts, the numbers have not decreased much over the years. This bill, admittedly not a solution by itself, will help reduce this silent epidemic of youth suicide through educational awareness programs that equip young people, educators, and parents with the tools and resources to help identify and assist at-risk youth. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. You'll find in your packet a number of statistics that are staggering, and we have, and you'll find online as well that that you have some material that I was unable to provide due to the volume of it, but the Alaska State Suicide Prevention Council has a 2012-17 report that has come out. It says casting the net upstream, promoting wellness to prevent suicide. They talk about schools and what they're doing, and I would also bring your attention to I think that maybe in your packet there a letter from Kate Burkhart from the State Suicide Prevention Council indicating the efforts in this area. It's ongoing. It doesn't seem to change the numbers much, but we're hoping that working with the young people and the teachers in the schools, we can reduce some of this problem.
Representative Sissonen.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is, what kind of work is being done to identify the community profiles that make it hardest for certainly children, but also adults, to want to live?
The profile, excuse me, through the chair.
What kinds of conditions? It's obviously rural Alaska is one of those. It's a high risk factor. And there's probably other things as well. And I think this bill is wonderful. I'm not questioning that, but I think that we're not hitting the mark right.
Well, through the chair, the Suicide Prevention Council, and I think there may be people that could speak to that, maybe even here. In this report, they mention on page 17, and this goes on for many pages, that the school districts will implement broad screenings to identify not just imminent risk of suicide, but factors for suicide, substance abuse, violence, depression, etc. They're working on this, and throughout all of society, they talk about adults, and they talk about children,
And I certainly don't have the answer. I'm not an expert in this area, but I think you'll find, and maybe when you hear from Clark Flatt, that this has been successful in reducing the number of suicides among young people. Just dealing with the schools helps bring it down. And to my amazement, and I was kind of surprised at the handout I put. The national handout on suicide is really rather shocking, the numbers of suicide throughout the nation. And so it's a problem throughout society. It's not just Alaska. And yet we have the highest incident in the country here, as you know, for various numbers of reasons.
I'd just like to comment. Throughout our family life, we've often taken foster kids and non-foster kids. Our door was always open to young people. And at one point, we had two foster kids, and one had been troubled, and we knew that. And there was and then one day we came home to a really, really ugly event, and I was stunned because what had preceded that for about 2 weeks, I knew the young man was very, very troubled. And then all of a sudden, he just seemed to relax, and I thought, boy, we're doing good. And I was his teacher, too. I was his math teacher. So I thought, I saw him in school, saw him at home, and I felt like we were doing good. I didn't realize that him actually coming to peace was the fact that he'd made the decision. And that one took me by surprise. I thought we were doing good in nurturing him and encouraging him, when in fact the sign was just as plain as day in front of my face, and I didn't know that it was one of the signs. The fact that he was troubled was a good sign. He was still wrestling. But once he'd had peace, he'd made up his mind and was just looking for the opportunity. And so I bring that out as a personal experience, that I didn't know that sign. Had I known that sign, things in our family, just 25, 28 years later, still feeling the impact of that, the remainder of our family. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Tom. In your statement, you mentioned that tying suicide prevention efforts into teacher training has proved helpful in other states. Do you have data to qualify that statement?
I don't know that I have the information on all the states. I think Clark Flatt can present that. He's online. He helped work with four or five other states in presenting this and the success rates. The NCSL has a number of some information out on this that is also fairly extensive, but as on suicide in ages and so forth. But if you're talking about what the states have done, I think I would let Clark Flatt address that, because it's through his efforts that a lot of states are taking this very, very seriously, and I might be able to get more information on that.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're all really disturbed that the Alaska rates are so significantly higher than other states, but part of what we did last year in HCR 5 was recognize that we are one of the farther north countries, and the book that just came out in Canada, the chapter 5 is Mood Disorders, Environment, and Suicide, and they have an entire chapter 5 related to environment and suicide, and shows the association between low vitamin D levels on all of the five medical conditions that are related to suicide. And so I'm kind of frustrated when we talk about, well, we're going to import something from the lower 48 to counsel kids, when we may have also, I mean, we need that, but if we have a basic medical condition in Alaska and Canada and all of far northern countries. I mean, suicide is a terrible problem in Russia as well. And we have books, I mean, not old books, new books, analyzing some of the basic problems, is that we have a tendency, because we have low vitamin D levels in our entire population. And then if we don't at least address those and recognize those problems and start to address those underlying things, so that the counseling and the recognition of suicide can be more effective. I mean, if we don't treat an underlying problem, that is associated with suicide, and we say we're just going to treat it by counseling or recognition of problems. I think that we sometimes miss the problem. Now, we adopted that resolution unanimously in the House and the Senate. That book wasn't even published, and we didn't have suicide in there. We had mood disorders, we had seasonal affective disorder, all the studies on those, you know, peer-reviewed scientific data. That one wasn't out yet, but it's out now. And so I just want to put on the record that I'm all in favor of suicide prevention, but I want to make sure that we're addressing the northern climate medical conditions that may be contributing and try to solve those as well as just recognizing that somebody is to a situation where they might commit suicide, and let's work on prevention as well. And I fully support the resolution here. I just want to make sure that we recognize that Alaska, Canada, Russia, and the northern tier countries are in a unique situation as well, and we don't want to disregard the differences that we have from those other southern states that may be contributing to that higher cost. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think you're absolutely right. I don't know that much about the medical conditions, but certainly the climate and the darkness and all of this has an effect on the northern climate. It's been proven with the alcoholism in Russia and so forth. And also going back, if I might, to Representative Kawasaki, I did find in the NCSL data, and I can provide it to him, facts and statistics on the states that are implementing suicide prevention education in the curriculums: Iowa, Maine, Maryland, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Vermont, Washington. So they have gatekeeper programs. There's a lot of information from the National Conference of State Legislature I could provide after the meeting here that would be helpful.
Okay, Representative Sisna, and then we do have an amendment that we can take a look at. Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly agree with Representative Seaton in his concern about looking at the health issues, looking at, and when I was talking about the profiling, and I'm a pro-profiling person, I think one of the problems we have in Alaska is we're not paying attention to what kind of state we have, what kind of community challenges that are being faced. Some of them are health, some of them are environmental. There's many different things to be considered, but what I also think, we don't do the kind of prehistoric analysis that we need to do in Alaska. One of the oldest, it is one of a few oldest living communities on the planet, is in the state of Alaska, Nikolsky in the Aleutians. And people lived there all of those years that wouldn't have survived in tough environments. We have throughout Alaska communities that have survived. And they had the health, they had that lack of vitamin D, right? I'm always forgetting all my ABCs, but that is one element. And there are a number of other elements that exist as well. And the fact that we're talking rural, and I think what we need to do is figure out lifestyles, just the energy problems that we face now. The rates have not gone down with the huge amount of money that Alaska's been spending. And yet what we have is the energy costs going up. I think things like that factor into this, how the community is surviving. They've been making enormous transfers from the time that we first came with our trapping. You know, they've been dealing with things. And we need to have a much better look at the state as a whole. And I hope that the educational community is, in fact, what really pushes that. I mean, that's what should push it. And so yours is right, but I think we need to have our eyes open and be making partnerships across all the many people that live here so that we can really understand what's going on. Something is really going on.
Well, through the chair, Representative Sisna, I do think it's not just an educational problem. It's part of the Department of Health and Social Services as well, and the behavioral health and mental health issues. All of this is connected in two of the largest departments in the state, and I think everyone's working on it.
Thank you. Well, we do have an amendment here. Representative Pruitt, will you move amendment number LS09994/M.1 by Michelle, dated 2/16/12?
Chair, I move amendment number M.1, which is as amendment number 1.
And I'll object for discussion.
Discussion. And Tom, would you walk us through the
Yes, I'd be happy to. The amendment is regarding tort immunity for the teachers and school personnel and the districts themselves that would be providing this service of and training, I should say, that would be receiving the training. And the question comes up as to what would happen if a child commits suicide and maybe the teacher wasn't trained hadn't been trained in the last 2 years. Well, what are the issues that might occur? Well, we did an analysis. We had our legal staff, Jean Michelle, who I believe is online, who did an analysis of state tort immunity and found that we really have a great deal of immunity already for discretionary functions. But it was felt that since a couple of other states that have imposed this type of legislation had also provided immunity, that we could provide additional cover for the people so they would feel comfortable that they would not be responsible through negligence on their part or the district's part. And so we came up with this paragraph to provide immunity, and I'd be happy to read it into the record if you like, that would provide the immunity from any type of legal action against them.
I don't think we need it written into the record. Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little concerned on page 1 in the amendment, reading on line 8. You know, this is immunity. Let's see, it's a person may not bring civil action for damages, you know, against basically anybody, the state or anybody in the school districts, for omission in failing to perform the duties or activities or duties authorized under this section. And it seems like we are saying, okay, districts, you must train, but districts, if you don't train anybody, there's absolutely no action that can be taken against you for not training your staff. And so that's the way I'm reading that, and I don't think that's the intention of this, but I would like to see if maybe Jean Michelle, if she's online, our lawyer, could address that concern.
Jean Michelle, did you hear that question by Representative Seaton?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Jean Michelle with Legal Services for the Legislature. The immunity provision is a fairly standard negligence immunity, and it does not immunize the school district or the state or their personnel from intentional misconduct. Provision for in the bill itself under Section 2 is mandatory training requirements, so that if a district refuses or has no basis for refusing to provide training, and the very difficult causal connection can be made between a death or an injury and the lack of that training, then the district or the state could be held liable.
Representative Seaton.
So the wording intentional misconduct with complete disregard for the safety and property of others, is that does complete disregard, I mean, if they decide not to have training this year because it's inconvenient or don't get an online course, would that be considered misconduct with complete disregard for the safety or property of others? Is that, I mean, if they would just not get around to offering the online training or other mechanisms or even requiring in their contracts that their teachers, you know, participate in the training. Is that complete disregard?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this is Jean Michelle again with Legal Services. A CORE would have to go through the evidence and that factual evidence is presented in a case like that. And if, for example, the school district made a financial decision that they couldn't afford it, and there are some cases on this very topic with respect to firefighting, and if the district didn't have the money that particular year or had some valid or what the court would construe as discretionary policy call for not having provided the training, then the Title IX immunity would apply. And so it's difficult to say without a very specific fact scenario of whether or not a court would find that to be intentional misconduct. It would depend very much upon the reasons for not having provided the training. But secondarily and maybe more importantly, the lack of the training has to be the cause of the injury or death. And that's a very high burden for a plaintiff to have to show, and that's also included in this amendment.
Representative Seaton.
Causation.
And thank you. I guess what I'm just trying to understand is, you know, this is really, it seems to be really broad immunity, and you know, we're trying to require somebody to do something, and then with such broad immunity, I want to make sure that we're not confounding the situation where we're wanting to advocate for and require suicide prevention training. And so I guess my question to you is, would you be concerned that the language presented in this immunity would allow districts to avoid doing the purpose of the bill, and that is to provide training, yeah, being required to provide training for suicide prevention?
Okay. Go ahead, Jean. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, Jean Michelle again. From a purely legal standpoint, no, because there are other provisions in Title 14 that require school districts to comply with state law. This immunity provision really just pertains to somebody looking for money as an enforcement mechanism. But there are other ways that the state and the Attorney General can enforce this provision. So the liability is a policy call, whether or not the state wants to waive its immunity. And we've already limited municipal employees' immunity to discretionary and functions and duties. So this broadens that somewhat, but it really is a policy call for the legislature to determine whether or not the civil lawsuit for monetary damages is the primary enforcement mechanism for this kind of training. And I would not anticipate that districts would arbitrarily deny their employees the training. It is a state law. It would be a state law if you were to pass this bill. And they're not allowed to just disregard state law without some justification or an exception. So the department, while the department is also required to provide this training, the department can force districts to provide the training under other supervisory functions of the department.
Representative Seaton.
Okay, thank you. And Jean, you are you're really detailed there. I was trying to get the broader concept. I think that what I'm hearing is that we're requiring them to do it in state law so that it can be enforced under that, and so that this immunity is not going to confound, you wouldn't anticipate this confounding the purpose of the bill. So if that's what I heard you say, would you just verify that, and then I'm comfortable leaving the amendment in.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, yes, I agree with that statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Sisson, is this in regard to the amendment?
It certainly is.
Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a good Democrat. I think this is just, it starts moving straight into more and more and more statutes that are on top of things that already take care of the problem. And when you're talking about suicide, training is an extremely important thing to do. We have schools throughout Alaska that are having a really tough time making it financially, adding to the cost tag of a school. And the department knows this is an issue. You have this in without, you've got a bill, without this. This is just more of the, when you're dealing with suicide, you're talking about inside of a person's mind. What we don't do, we're never going to be able to legislate it, being able to read people's minds. And as the chair was mentioning, the fact is that what would look like you've actually succeeded in solving a problem actually is a sign that another decision has been made that you can't control. And pardon me. Did you hear what I said?
Yes.
Chair, Representative Sisna, this immunity issue was really an issue that was brought up through the Anchorage School District and their own attorneys initially. We felt that we had enough immunity, as you point out, already, and yet in talking with others, we found that, and we did research. When that came out, we immediately did research and found that there were other states that had imposed extra immunity for these people. What we're really trying to do here is let school districts feel comfortable that if they do this and for some reason some child commits suicide, that all at once the teacher doesn't feel that they're ultimately responsible. This whole program is just to help identify awareness and prevent suicide. It's not a fix-all. The prima facie case of negligence would be a duty of care and a breach of duty and damages and injury. And these would this would be something that wouldn't be anticipated. We are trying to exclude from this any intentional act on their part of avoiding taking the training and so forth. But I wanted to also mention, and it hasn't been brought out yet, that first of all, there is no fiscal note on this. There are many programs already available, including the Jason Pro Foundation and other programs that will provide this free to the school districts. And the teachers will not be required to take extra class time. They can do this online as a rule. There are other training programs for in-service, and this can also be part of their continuing education elective hours each year. So it really has a benefit to the teachers as well as a reducing the fiscal problem. Thank you.
Do we still have an objection to the amendment?
May I do a follow-up? Mm-hmm. Thank you. To me, what this amendment does is it's where you put all of your energy that really says what your goals and what your purpose and what your what is really important to you is, and what's really important to us here is the law and making positive that we check every single little detail, but not the issue. And the issue is surrounding our children with the, not the fact that there's plenty of attorneys out there taking care of everything and we've got every class that everybody's supposed to take, but that they're important and that they live in a world that really makes sense. And that's where we're going really wrong here in the state, is this doesn't make, this state isn't making the kind of sense it needs to make. That the first people actually had to have that, or they wouldn't have lived here. They wouldn't have made it. And this is just more, every single thing that happens has to have these, this language in it. It starts the focus at, and making sure that our attorneys, other professions may be out the window, but our attorneys are going to have full, full employment no matter what. And I was raised by an attorney, so I'm not saying anything against attorneys. I just think this approach is just not the approach we need to be thinking about. We need to be thinking about the families and the kids themselves, but their families and their communities.
Okay. Representative Seaton, do you...
I'll remove my objection.
Remove your objection. Do we have any further objection? Representative Sisson, I think we agree with you that we wish we didn't have to go here, but your school district was the one that requested us to put this in here so that we could move forward, and that's what we're trying to do here. We do have people signed up for testimony, so do you have a further objection?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I'm going to vote against this one.
Okay. Any other comment? Okay, can we call roll on this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Was this offered as amendment number one?
This is amendment number one.
Thank you.
This is amendment M.1 to Senate Bill 137. Representative Wilson is absent. Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Feige. Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Sisson?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Chair Vick?
Yes.
I have 4 yeas, 1 nay.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask on the record, I understood her to say that this is amendment M.12. I only had...
I think she said...
Oh, M1. Okay, I'm sorry.
It was perfect. House bill.
Oh, two. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you. No, I heard the same thing.
Yes, and okay, then the amendment M.1 has passed. And okay, is there a further committee discussion on SB 137? We do have public testimony. Okay, let's moving on. Let's see, in the Anchorage LIO, we have Ann Schack from North Star Behavioral Health and Jason's Foundation. Ann, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ann Schack. I represent North Star Behavioral Health. We work with children and adolescents from around Alaska in need of acute behavioral health services and residential treatment. I also represent Alaska's first affiliate office of the Jason Foundation, which is dedicated to the prevention of youth suicide through education and awareness. With Alaska's youth suicide rates alarmingly high, we appreciate this opportunity to voice our support for this bill. School personnel are in a key position to identify at-risk youth and connect them with support. We look forward to being part of the efforts to equip educators and school personnel with the tools and resources to help identify and assist at-risk youth. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have quite a few people to testify, and I don't believe there's a lot of opposition here, but we do want to hear all the folks who are signed up to testify. Let's see, off-net, Carol Walters, are you from Anchorage? Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent. And give you testimony.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Carol Waters, W-A-T-E-R-S. I work with the Alaska Association of Student Government, which is a student-led organization. I'm the executive director. 3 years ago, the Alaska Association of Student Governments began working with suicide prevention of youth. We offered workshops and so forth in our conferences. And we are very, very pleased that this bill is going forward to get training for schools. Many students have asked for this to happen, that students really want the support in schools, and they feel that teachers and other staff in the schools are in a prime spot to prevent suicide. Oftentimes, schools will offer suicide experience to support the students, but students are saying they want that to be preventative, not have the suicides at all. As we all know, only one suicide in a school is way, way too many. So thank you very much for having this bill go forward, and the students of Alaska appreciate that. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. We do have Kate Burkhart from Juneau here in the with us here in the audience. Kate, would you want to come forward and give your testimony? And identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhart, and I'm the executive director of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, as well as the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And my comments this morning are on behalf of those organizations and no one else. The Statewide Suicide Prevention Council supports this bill. We think that it is a great step forward in achieving one of the strategies in the state suicide prevention plan. And that strategy is to provide suicide prevention and awareness training to all school personnel, from the janitor to the principal. This bill identifies certain categories of educators and support staff for the 2 hours of training, and we feel that it's a great step forward and will provide us the opportunity to evaluate the effectiveness of educator training in this area and how it helps preserve the lives of our young people. With that statement of support, I'd like to focus on two things. The first, resources available to school districts at no cost. You see that there's a zero fiscal note from the Department of Education. That's because we do have resources available to school districts that do not add to the financial burden to the district and can be offered in a way that don't burden educators. You've heard from the Jason Foundation. They have a library of resources that are available on DVD and with curricula that help educate teachers and can be used in an in-service. We have online trainings available, and the Department of Education is working on an additional e-learning module around this. The Division of Behavioral Health offers a gatekeeper program. It was designed in Alaska for Alaskans and is coordinated by James Galanos, who is behind me. And we already have school districts coordinating those trainings, even though this bill hasn't passed. The North Star Borough is already working toward that, so I'm very excited about that. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and South Central Foundation both offer assist trainings, that's applied suicide intervention skills trainings, at South Central's is at no cost in the Anchorage area. Anyone can go. I'm going to attend, even though I'm not a beneficiary of South Central. So we do have the opportunity to provide training to schools in a way that is not burdensome, but is instead exclusively value added. So my second point is to follow up on some of the comments I've heard this morning. I really want to emphasize your comments that show that suicide has a web of causality. There is no one cause and there is no one solution. And SB 137 is part of that network of solutions that we've been working so hard to put together. Chairman Dick, your comments about not understanding that a swing in mood to the positive is actually a warning sign. SB 137 is going to ensure that educators understand that any major change in mood, good or bad, is something that you should perk your ears up to. I'm very concerned about comments that living in rural Alaska is a risk factor or that being Alaska Native is a risk factor. That's just not the case. The greatest number of suicides in Alaska occur in the Anchorage area. And so we need to be very careful not to stigmatize suicide as something that only affects one ethnicity or one kind of community, when in fact it affects all of our communities. Mr. Obermeyer spoke to 176 communities, big and small. Instead, we need to focus on the idea of promoting wellness, and that's where the council has head with their plan, and the idea of finding all of those areas where we can strengthen young people, adults, old people, everybody, so that we can resist life's challenges and respond in a healthy way. So thank you very much, and I can answer any questions.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Kate. You mentioned in the very beginning of your testimony that you believe this is the start of training folks from the teacher, administrator, all the way down to the janitor. This just includes in the language, it says teacher, administrator, counselor, and specialist.
Correct. Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, the council's recommendation is that everyone in a school, everybody get training. We have heard, for example, in Barrow, the football coach, Brian Houston, is this amazing mentor and has woven suicide prevention into his athletic camps. And so the youth really connect with him. But we also hear that sometimes the maintenance guy that's wandering the halls after school is who people relate to. And so the council's recommendation is everybody affiliated with schools gets training. This bill has identified certain categories, and it's a great start.
Okay. Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much. And I was the one who used it. I used the identified with. I did make, and maybe I didn't do it to this specific thing, but I talked about the first Alaskans being the ones who probably were the healthiest people who've ever lived here because they survived. We've been here, Western society, a couple hundred years, and we're creating a situation where we saw in the Skagway schools they're half the size they were. It's not exactly what I call growing success. The kids are doing great, yes, and I'm not anything against Skagway, but we're talking about a cultural transformation that's happening in this state that is not bringing about really great symptoms in health. We've got some serious problems. I've had a class in suicide. It was the class that was taught through UAF, but it was also the suicide line that operated in Fairbanks when I lived there that 1 year and working for Fairbanks Mental Health. And so I've been through all of that. Unfortunately, a year later, my adopted son took his life. And I was talking to him steadily beforehand. So like the chair, I actually have been through that, but through the worst. And it is the worst. We have to understand, and as you said, it's a web. We've got to understand that web. We have to understand the whole web. And the symptom is, unfortunately, the children, and in the case of my late adopted son, he was in his mid-30s. And he was diagnosed with suicidal ideation when he was 5 years old. And that's what we have in our state, is we have conditions that we must understand far more than we do. And this bill is wonderful. It is another step. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki.
Yep.
And we do have four other people online. Go ahead.
Just really quickly, and I meant to ask somebody earlier, how long a training you would expect or envision would take, how long it would take?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, the bill contemplates a two-hour training. The models available here in Alaska range from half a day to 3 days. Some of the online options are 8 to 12 hours, but they can be done in hour-long sessions. So it's really up to the Department of Education to approve those evidence-based trainings, and my understanding is they're going to approve a list, and then for the district to decide what they want to use. So the bill would require at least 2 hours, but like I said, Fairbanks North Star Borough is looking at Gatekeeper, which is, I think they're looking at the longer two-day Gatekeeper version, so they're going above and beyond.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
And thank you, Representative Sisna, for sharing that story with us.
Yeah. Okay, we have James Bielda from Bethel online. Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent and give your testimony.
Good morning. My name is James Bielda. I'm calling in support of Senate Bill 137 on behalf of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention for the Alaska chapter. I'm currently employed with the Lower Kuskokwim School District as an itinerant school social worker. I'm also a registered trainer for the Applied Suicide Intervention Skill Training, known as an ASSIST. I'm assigned 5 villages across the district and work with families and students and school personnel. Teachers and school employees are the main contacts for our students and are often the first to identify those at risk. Often teachers will refer the sudden changes in behavior to the social workers or to the counselor, yet feel uninformed of the signs of suicide. The LKSD back in December 2010 did an assist training at one particular school in the village off the Bering Coast for teachers, students, and the community. One teacher did not want to attend this particular training, but however, after 24 hours of completing the training, he was actually able to identify one student who was on the verge of committing suicide and contact myself for assistance. We were able to secure immediate referral to the behavioral health aide. This student had his plan to commit suicide, and if the teacher did not have the skills to identify and intervene, this one student could be deceased. The teacher now admits that this training was very valuable and was one of the best in-service trainings he had had. This area, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, has four more trainings scheduled for the next 2 months, and we just completed one with students and teachers in Creekluck. The trainings are done at no cost to the district, and although we are currently using the ASSIST program here in LKSD, there are many more programs that can be done in less time. With the high rates of suicide in this area, and the more training for those who have constant contact with the students, will prevent further death. I appreciate you hearing Senate Bill 137, and I encourage you to pass 137. Thank you.
Thank you, James. We have also online, we have Alton Clark Fratt from the Jason Foundation. Please identify yourself for the record, and are you in Tennessee?
Yes, sir. My name is Clark Fratt. I'm President and CEO of the Jason Foundation, and our corporate headquarters is in Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Okay. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. On July 16, 1997, I lost my youngest son, Jason, to what we call now the silent epidemic of youth suicide. And following that death, it was in October of 1997, the Jason Foundation was begun. Today, we have 87 offices located in 33 states, and we're proud that we do have the Jason Foundation at North Star Behavioral Health there in Anchorage. It was during our opening that I was able to come up and spend some time there. That we talked about the Jason Flat Act that had been passed in six other states at that time. When Senator Betty Davis showed him great interest in wanting to present this to Alaska, and we were very much because of the rate that we had looked at and known about it. One of the reasons why we had selected to expand into Alaska. The Jason Flat Act now has been passed in eight states since that date, since October. So we're proud to be bringing it to Alaska. We are working with the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention to introduce it in several states. We have seen the impact of training teachers. Of course, the longest one is 2007 since Tennessee passed the Jason Flat Act first. In 2010, most latest report, the next one will come out in a couple of months, we saw a 17% decrease in youth suicide rates in 1 year. Although, as many of them said, you cannot tie it to one resource or one endeavor, but here in Tennessee, that makes the fourth year in a row that we had training for 74,000 teachers. And it just goes to reason by being one of the strategies of the National Strategy for Suicide Prevention that we're now seeing a lot of those being recognized and referred by teachers very early on in the suicidal ideation, which is a key to a successful prevention. We're very proud to be introducing it and show the model that we have successfully shown that works without a fiscal note. It does take more than the Jason Foundation. It takes all the organizations, many of them who have testified today, all working together. We've seen this happen in now eight states that have passed it and started working together on it. And we know that this model can make an impact. It is not the answer to all, but it is surely a great step to make an impact there in Alaska. And we have pledged a lot of resources to help make that come true. And I would be glad to answer any questions. But thank you for allowing someone outside of your state to testify on this. I appreciate it.
Oh, we're really honored to have you call in. I just wanted to clarify. So TN here, and I thought that was Tennessee, but it's hard to tell. You know, we do need to know that a seed needs to fall to the ground and die before there can be fruit, and we're really, very thoughtful and mindful of your loss, and but we're still encouraged that you are able to turn that into a tremendous benefit for many other people. So we thank you for your patience in waiting and your very accurate testimony. Any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much, and we really hope that you're able to expand your effort into many other states. We're proud to be a part of this. Okay, Sharon Strutz Norton from Homer, are you online?
Yes.
Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Good morning, I'm Sharon Strutz Norton. I'm from Homer, Alaska. I'm a child and family psychiatric nurse practitioner, a mother and a grandmother of a 10. While I'm a member of the Alaska Suicide Prevention Council, I speak today as a concerned Alaskan, Alaska suicide, family suicide survivor as I lost my husband to suicide, and as a secretary of the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention in Alaska and as their field advocate. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 137. In the past, I had a booth on suicide awareness and prevention at the Health Fair in Homer, where several youth approached me, ranging in age from middle school to high school, and shared stories of friends being stressed or depressed for a variety of reasons and talking of suicide. Prior to and since that time, unfortunately, I've heard many times of youth attempting and completing the act of suicide in Homer and throughout the state of Alaska. This fall, when I spoke at the statewide school counselor conference, counselors shared many stories of youth attempting and too many completing the act of suicide, how each attempt and completion affected other survivors' students' ability to concentrate and learn from their studies while grieving the loss of a friend or family member, with many suffering repeated losses. Implementation of this education training models will have demonstrated increases in knowledge and confidence, likelihood that school staff members would approach a student perceived to be at risk, and increase their ability to ask directly about suicide, to be persuasive about helping the student get assistance in making referrals. A month ago, the United States Department of Health and Social Services at Heartbeat 2012 discussed research from the University of Washington where they studied 883 18 to 19-year-olds who had attempted suicide. Almost 40% said their first attempt was made before high school. The earliest was age 9, after which there was a sharp increase in 6th grade, and the numbers continued to rise with first attempts peaking at 8th to 9th grade. Sadly, in the last 3 weeks, the community of Seward has had 3 suicides of young adult men, not in high school, and it's unknown if education in their community would have helped deter those suicides. But I believe the state supporting and passing the bill mandating all school personnel have suicide prevention education may have a significant impact on youth suicide outcomes.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. Question from committee. Okay, I believe also online we have Barb Angayak in Anchorage. Barb, if you're there, please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this opportunity. I am Barb Angayak. I am the president of NEA Alaska. We represent 13,000 educators across the state. We are absolutely in support of passage of this bill. Believe that there is no training that exists that could be more important and have such great potential for impact than this. I think many of the people who have spoken, and I have certainly written on the topic many times, recognize that there are many of the things that are included in this training will help us in many ways, and there will be benefit to all of our students, and this is an issue that impacts every community in our state, even those communities that have not personally experienced suicide are affected by the impact of this tragic situation. There is no doubt that many of the programs that are available are effective. There are a variety of them. We encourage the idea that a district look at what programs really will fit for the communities that they represent. And I think there are a couple of folks who have testified today who have said that they think this ought to be expanded, and I agree with them. All educators, everyone who works in our schools, everyone who comes in contact in our public education system with our students needs this training. There are many, many examples of support staff members who are in direct contact with students on a regular basis, and those very often are the individuals that students who are in this high need for attention and recognition go to get that validation and to get support. Very often, it is not classroom teachers, it is not a principal, but rather a food service worker, a custodian, a maintenance worker, a paraprofessional. All of those folks sometimes are able to develop a much stronger relationship with our students. And of course, it's very dependent on the individual, but we want to make sure that every child has access to someone who has training and has the expertise and knowledge to help them get the assistance that they need. So we are in support of Senate Bill 137, and we encourage all legislators to make this a unanimous support vote. Thank you.
And thank you, Barb. We certainly do respect your testimony. Okay, I don't see anybody here that would anybody in the that's here in the room would like to testify further. Okay, with that, public testimony will be closed. What's the wish of the committee, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I've been encouraged by some of my constituents to broaden this out for training. However, I just want to put on the record that the way the bill is constructed, it has a zero fiscal note, and the difference is that I think that school districts are going to be proceeding with this in the most effective way, and I am hopeful that they offer, without being required by state law, to offer it to the personnel in their school systems. But if we would put on the amendment to require everyone in the schools to be trained, it would require a fiscal note. It would have a chance of not getting through our system. So I'm not going to offer that amendment, but I wanted to, I think several members of the committee have been contacted by people wanting to expand the training out to everybody, and I wanted to explain to the listening public why it is really important to get training done in a way that can be dovetailed with teacher training without a fiscal impact to the state. So that's why I'm not offering that amendment, and just for the explanation for other committee members as well. Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this have a second referral? Finance. Okay. Then I just have one comment. Well, actually, I better make the comment now, Mr. Chairman. And it's for the sponsor's representative. In line 9 on the bill, it says the school district, the regional education attendance area, and the department shall provide annually. So I guess whose responsibility would it be ultimately to provide that?
Through the chair, Tom Obermeyer. I have to look at the line that you're referring to. If you give me a minute here. What line were you referring to?
thank you, Mr. Chairman. In page 1, the first line of the bill on line 9, it says a school district, regional education attendance area, and the department shall annually provide this training. So I guess whose responsibility is it ultimately to provide the training?
Through the chair, it's my understanding that the department would be responsible through state law to follow through with the as Jean Michelle had indicated, in imposing this throughout the state, but also to work with the districts to try to set this up. Each district will have its own resources. Some of these resources are already in play, and different programs are already in play throughout the system. And I think the department would need to answer that question rather than myself, to be honest with you.
Jim Michelle, are you still online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Jean Michelle with Legal Services.
Did you hear that question?
I did hear the question, Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. You'd have to read the entire sentence for that to make perfect sense, but essentially what this bill requires is that the commissioner approve the training, the State Commissioner of Education and Early Development, and that the school district, REAA, and the department provide that training to their own employees. So you have to go down to line 12, who is employed by the district REA or department.
In terms of
enforcement, the department would have the ability to require the REA and the district to follow through on that.
Representative Kawasaki.
And thanks, Gene. And so for clarification, would a counselor or an administrator who works at the regional public health center be required to take the training as a member of the department?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I'm not familiar with the regional public health centers. Is that the part of the regional resource center that you're referring to?
Representative Kawasaki.
I guess I'm just trying to clarify who would actually have to take this in addition to a school district employee.
Oh, through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, these are people who are employed by the state or school district or REAA as a teacher, administrator, counselor, or specialist, and that the reason the department is listed separately is because they function as an employer of some of those individuals through the state boarding school and other statewide programs.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. Again, what is the wish of the committee? Representative Pruitt, will you move SB 137 as amended from committee with this accompanying zero fiscal note and individual recommendations?
Mr. Chair, I move SB 37, sorry, as amended from committee with the individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
And seeing no objection, SB 137 moves from committee as amended. Tom, don't you wish they're all that easy? Okay, but wait, before we skedaddle, we will, while we're signing this, I do want to just announce to the committee that, and Annette, if we have these, okay. In your packet today, there is a two-sided paper that we need to have discussion next Monday. And I want to bring it to the attention of the committee, reasons for not adopting the proposed Alaska State Standards by Representative Alan Dick. And these are just talking points, and I'd like to bring them to your attention today. This is certainly not a final product here. I'd be willing to spend time with the committee, any committee member over the weekend, today, over the weekend, whatever. But I just really do want us all to come, full of thoughts and inspiration on Monday. So feel free to disagree with any part of this. It's certainly not talking point. So, but I do want everybody to have their attention on that so Monday we can have that meaningful conversation. Okay, our next meeting will be Monday, March 19th, when we'll take up presentation by the University of Alaska, Chuck Chi, and the Alaska Technical Center. Will not be a superintendent. It's going to be one of our distance delivery for secondary education, continuation of our discussion with Commissioner Hanley on education, and if we have time, HB 272, student loan interest reductions. With no further business, at this time we're adjourned, but don't skedaddle until you sign. Thank you.